Welcome to Mentioned in Dispatches, the podcast from the Western Front Association, with me, Dr. Tom Thorpe. The WFA is the UK's largest Great War History Society. We are dedicated to furthering understanding of the Great War and have around 6,000 members worldwide. For more information, visit our website at westernfrontassociation.com. It is the 22nd of May, 2025, and this is episode 357. On this week's episode of the podcast, I talk to Philip Cross about the story of his great-great-great-grandfather, Lieutenant Alex Pfeiffer, service in the German army during the First World War. Philip spoke to me from his home in Lancashire. Hi, Philip. Welcome to the Dispatches podcast. Can you start by telling us a bit about yourself and what led you to discover your great-great-grandfather's diary?
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, a lot of you'll be surprised that I've got an English accent. I'm actually from here in the north of England. I'm half German, so I was born in Germany when I was when I moved here when I was one. So growing up, I always had, I kind of experienced the cultures of both countries. Spent a lot of time in Germany and so on. It was actually my mum's side that has this remarkable family history, so to say. And so my great-great-grandfather, Alexander Pfeiffer, came from a family of textile manufacturers in a town called Weida in Thuringia. And yeah, I mean, when he was 20, 1900, he basically enlisted in the Royal and the Saxon Army. So as a Saxon Jäger. By the time the First World War broke out, he was already an experienced sergeant. He was a reserve. And he told his wife of this plan. Well, when he was called up, told his wife of his plan to write a diary. And he instructed her to send these notes home on a regular basis, so he would send them home and his wife would then basically just preserve them until he got back. And his plan was to then create this into, kind of bind it into a single book for the family to read. But he didn't, honestly, could never anticipate how long the war would last. So, and that's kind of how it all started. And this book has basically been in the family ever since, with items, postcards, items that he kind of preserved from his own uniform, pictures that he took. He brought a camera along with him. He was on the Western Front, on the Eastern Front, fighting the Russians, fighting the Italians in Italy, and then back on the Western Front. So he experienced quite a lot. So that's how it came about. So I always knew about the diary. It was just me kind of exploring deeper and kind of translating it and putting it all together.
So this is a bit of background. What unit was Lieutenant Pfeiffer, as in Michelle Pfeiffer, I believe? What unit was he in? And sort of when you talk about he was in a reserve unit, so was this a sort of a part-time unit that he would serve and it was mobilised once war broke out?
Yes, so he was... So when the war broke out, he was in the 11th Kessian Jäger Battalion. So these Jäger units were basically elite troops. So they specialized in skirmishing tactics, mountain warfare, and so on. And they entailed a lot of minor nobility, so princes, dukes, and so on. And he was basically in the reserve battalion. So when the active battalion suffered heavy casualties just after mobilisation, 1914. His reserve battalion was then sent to France in September 1914. That's when he saw his first action.
And so you inherited Lieutenant Pfeiffer's diary and his personal belongings. What was it like actually going through these records for the first time?
So it was actually, my Alexander Pfeiffer's grandson, so my granddad, he was partly raised by Alexander. So the items kind of went down to him. And then when my grandfather died, 2007, all this stuff came to my mother, my brother, and myself. And I mean, we always knew this stuff was there. So there was always this Gurkha knife that was found on a fallen Gurkha with some letters, postcards from fallen soldiers found during the Battle of Loos, other battles in 1914. So we always knew this stuff was there. But when you're a teenager, you don't really pay much attention to it. So we'd always flick and have a look in the book every now and then and look at some of the diary extracts. But when I was like in my 20s, I mean, you're obviously more mature. And I just developed more of an interest in this stuff. And then for some reason, this was about 5 years ago, I just decided to research some of the postcards. And then with that, I obviously wanted to know how these soldiers died and how we came across these postcards. So then I started to look at the diary. And I started reading it for the first time in full, and I was just so amazed how this was just kind of under the bed for so long, for over 10 years, just collecting dust basically. And it was just absolutely fascinating. I mean, you think of a diary and it's like a journal, scribbly, and like a scrapbook. And what he did was he typed out the notes after the war. So it was by a typewriter. So it was so well preserved and could read it so fluently. And it was just fascinating. And I started in time translating the text into English. And then I started finding more things along the way because I was obviously looking for these things. And then when I went back to Germany to see my family, there was a bag just full of photo albums that he kind of with photos that he took. And all these photos he described on the back in really neat writing, dated them, what's depicted. So you could actually match them up with the correct diary entries. And it just kept adding up and adding up. And then I started researching the soldiers, looking at kind of the other items, how they relate to the diary and his wartime experiences. And yes, so I can't say it was just one big discovery. It was kind of just exploring what I knew was already there and finding things along the way.
Now, certainly in my grandfather's, I was prompted by this anecdote because of the next question. In my grandfather's scrapbook, there was a picture of a sort of a German soldier with a very long rifle, or it was a very short German soldier, and it said taken from a POW. And I always wondered who this individual was that came across my grandfather. And I gather that your great great grandfather has a similar sort of incident that he managed. He found a postcard which belonged to a Percy Private Walsh. Now, how did you come across this, and what made you, a bit of a spoiler, you start to track down the family? So, who was Percy Walsh, and what sort of motivated you to do a bit of detective work?
So in 1914, the British and the Germans were heavily, entrenched at this point. And it was just around Christmas time, 1940. I know you hear big, the Christmas truce and so on, but it wasn't the case for Alexander and the British opposite Alexander. And so in this, well, in the diary, it's about a 5-page report, and he goes in so much detail how they lost a trench to the British and the Gurkhas, and then the next day they got the revenge and blasted them back out again with grenades. And when they recaptured the trenches where he found this one postcard as well as this Gurkha knife and some Gurkha letters, and with the postcard of Percy, and I'll explain how I discovered he was called Percy shortly. It was just a picture of a few soldiers with a few women in the background with a tent and some rifles next to them. And on the back, it just says, "Love from us all to Percy," dated 28th of the 10th, 1914. And because he drew maps, he explained positions so well, we knew exactly where he was. And it wasn't hard, well, this day and age, you just look at you look at war records, you look at databases. So I typed in Percy, And then there was luckily only one person who died in that exact same area. And then I matched his battalion's history up with Alexander's, and they literally fought head to head. And the reason, well, he was actually noted as missing. And the reason was because he was behind, well, behind enemy lines in Alexander's trench. And yeah, it was just using ancestry and so on, the Commonwealth War Graves Commission's databases to narrow it down, eventually finding some living relatives.
And so who was Percy? What was he doing? And what unit did he belong to?
Yeah, it was the Loyal North Lancashire Regiment. And he, well, when I was doing my research, it turns out he enlisted about a year before the war commenced, and he had a wife who he married about a year before he died, and he had a 6-month-old son. And it turns out he was actually on sick leave for a couple of months, and then returned individually to his regiment just before he passed away. And that's pretty much how it kind of led to his death, really. He had the task of pushing the Germans out, which they did successfully, but then the Germans got their revenge and pushed them back out. And that's when Percy was, well, he was obviously dead with his belongings there in the trench with him.
And so I assume he was a full-time regular British soldier, and obviously mobilised to fight in France in the early part of the war in the latter half of 1914.
Yes. And well, that's, we'll probably get to how I discovered the living relatives soon. But when I spoke to them, they actually had some stories about Percy, and that he was just well, he was a weaver and from quite a poor family. And one of their relatives said that, well, who listened to stories of Percy, that he actually joined up because he was told that when you join up, get a nice uniform, you look good in like your Sunday best in the uniform. And the background that he came from, it was obviously something that encouraged him to join up, but it obviously led to his death. And hearing that story as well just makes it even more sad.
And so did he come from Lancashire himself? Was it Manchester he was from?
Yeah, I know, he was from Blackburn, so literally up the road from where I live. And that's what makes it all so special, because all these soldiers, they come from the places where I was raised, pretty much Oldham, Blackburn, other parts of Lancashire. So it, you have, I mean, it's such a coincidence. This postcard and all these many other items were in Germany for over 100 years, and they've come back to where they were written or where they originally stem from.
So, tell us a story of how you found Percy Walsh's relatives, and what was the experience like actually meeting them?
Yeah, oh, I mean, it was, I mean, it was such an incredible journey. I mean, finding them wasn't actually too difficult because I use ancestry, and somebody included Percy into the family tree as a great uncle, so their grandfather's brother, and I had a help. Well, I had some help from the historians in Blackburn, and he helped me kind of set up a meeting with them in the library. And prior to this, I'd actually spoken to someone at the library and this historian, so they'd already seen me before. But then on this one day, when we managed to meet, about five members of the Walsh family were around the table with the historian and the one of the librarians, and it was just incredible. I mean, we shared stories. I brought the photos of Alexander, the diary, and some other artifacts, and I had the postcard with me. And that's when I kind of gave him the postcard back, so to say, and it was like closure. It really was, and it was just, I mean, I can't put the feeling into words because it's just such a unique kind of scenario in a way. But yeah, I mean, you see, Alexander's here no more, but it was like he was there with me, and it was just kind of like him giving it back to kind of the Walsh side, if that makes sense. And it's also worth mentioning that this story actually made it to the BBC for the Remembrance Story last year. And it turns out that the granddaughter of Percy is alive and well. She's 90 years old, lives literally 5 to 10 minutes away from me. So, and these two sides of the Walsh family never knew about each other because Percy's wife, Alice, was widowed. So her and her son were obviously kind of cut off from the Walsh family, and she later remarried. So they never actually knew about each other. So in a way, that kind of brought them together, and they have cousins, extended family that they never knew of. So all because of this one postcard. So it's like the missing, like kind of like the key to it all in a way.
And tell us about other bits of Alexander's diary. He gives a very vivid account of the trenches. What were some of the sort of striking or emotional passages that you found from his experience on the other side of no man's land?
So what strikes me in particular is how unemotional he is in his writing. So he never actually talks about his like deep emotions. But when his commander, Captain Walter Boytin, passed away during the Battle of Festubert, it's the first time that he actually expresses his emotions and some deep sorrow for someone. And it's just really sad. I mean, he obviously sees his bloody body lying there with a shrapnel shot through his chest, next to a lieutenant that he Alexander knew as well, and that died next to Boytin. And it just puts things into perspective that you realize that even though he never talks about his feelings, that these deaths must have affected him so deeply, and especially in this one passage where it's the first and last time where he really talks about this. And there's another passage as well where he talks about finding these letters on fallen English soldiers. And Alexander could actually speak fluent English, so he was one of the men who would look at the letters, diaries, and postcards of soldiers to see if they could actually find any information from this. And he says that in one of the recaptured trenches, he found a letter on a soldier, and he wrote home saying that this was the worst place he had seen since he landed here in France. And then at the end, it just says, well, he wished the war was over. Well, it was certainly over for the writer of this letter, as he lay there with a shattered skull with many others. And it's just so sad, you know. And in that moment, he must have thought, well, I'm married as well. I have a wife. I'm in the exact same situation, but this English soldier is just on the other side. And it must have been a big reality check, because this was 1914, by the way. So for him and us, it kind of puts things into perspective quite a lot.
And so, what about Alexander's service during the rest of the war? What did he get up to, and did he survive? Obviously, he survived to the end, but did he survive unwounded to the end?
Miraculously, more or less, yes. So he was a company commander, started 1915, and he made it to first lieutenant. And he even says that because it was such an elite and prestigious battalion, it was so hard to rank up. So we often even intended on wanting to be transferred to the infantry because of this. However, he eventually made it, so he survived 1914, Festubert 1915, Battle of Loos. And then in 1916, it was transferred to the Carpathians as part of the Carpathian Corps. And from there, he experienced mountain warfare alongside the Austrians against the Russians. And there was even a truce, which not many people know about until now, amongst the Germans and the Russians. And then he was sent to the Isonzo in Italy, one of very, very few. So, then he was sent back to the Western Front in 1918. But luckily for him, he was promoted to the commander of the division trucks, which took him away from his company. And he expressed anger over this, but it saved his life more or less. And he came out more or less unwounded, apart from a shrapnel kind of dent onto his on his shin, and he got the wounded badge because of that. But I think it was more just like maybe just a sign of, I don't know, he just gave it him for the sake of it, I suppose. But yeah, as he was awarded both fine crosses and a few medals as well that were held in very high regard and awarded to few.
So you've described the diary as a form of therapy for Alexander. How do you think writing about his experiences helped him cope with the stresses of a really active service, life that he pursued? He was in combat and saw a lot of action throughout the 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think with this diary, it was, you notice how it gets more detailed as it progresses, and especially when he's just gone through hell in some of the most bloodiest battles, he writes in so much detail. And I think at the time it was, I mean, expressing your emotions wasn't really a thing. It wasn't really seen as a manly thing to do, and expressing it through his writing, because he was a very good writer, it was probably just his way of kind of processing it properly. And after the war as well, you've got all these photographs, the maps, things you compiled together and explained and described in so much detail, where which enabled me to put everything together so well into this book. And he even has things like newspaper articles, which I'll show you on the screen in a minute, cardboard cutouts. So we got something like a cereal box, and then wrote a list of all his the men who died in his battalion, and newspaper articles where he writes and labels things. Obviously, the diary, typed that up after the war, which must have taken a long time, and it must have just been a way to relive it all and process it, and his form of therapy. And that's the only way I can somehow explain how he why he continued to write it.
And do you think he in a way saw but that he might publish this one day? Because obviously lots of people in the 20s and
Yes.
30s do publish their memoirs, they publish their diaries. And do you think he saw that maybe as a history of the conflict? Because it sounds like he was a
Yes, yeah.
purposeful diary keeper. The fact he sent things home, he wrote it up, and it obviously meant a lot to him to record what happened to him.
I don't think he I don't think he intended it to be published, if I'm being honest, because considering the type of man he was, he probably would have taken it into his own hands to do that. But yes, I mean, even his well he, within his introduction, which he including the first page of his diary, he mentions how this is basically a historical document, and I've left nothing, I've changed absolutely nothing, because this is intended to reflect my true feelings at the time. And it's so what we see in the book that I publish, it's completely unedited, and that's exactly how he typed it out, and I just translated it to make it sound good in English, so to say. So yeah, but we never know. I mean, everyone who knew him on a personal level, they're not around anymore, unfortunately. So we can't really ask anyone.
And what do you think the diary indicates about sort of broader insights to the world that they lived in and the experience of war?
I mean, yeah, I mean, while working on this diary and the project overall, it you realize how the First World War, the legacy of it lives on in all of us. So even if you don't know it, I mean, like the postcards, everything that you can connect to this diary, you can connect it to other people who are living to this day. And even us two talking, if today, if it wasn't for him writing this diary, you'd be kind of living a different version of this day, and vice versa. So it's yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. And there's so many other things that he talks about in his diary that aren't really spoken of in a lot of memoirs, because a lot of memoirs were written kind of years after the war. But things like how much things cost, the names of specific people, small interactions, pictures that he took of people and things. It's almost like a portal into the past. And a lot of people on the English side as well, I've got a lot of people who I'm still in touch with, who reached out to me while I was doing research for the book, whose relatives actually fought against Alexander. So to them, it was a bit of closure as well, knowing what their great uncle or great grandfather were up against, over 100 years ago. So it brings two sides closer together.
I'm just being joined by my furry assistant, who's now coming up to join me. She's been wailing in the corridor. Apologies for that slight interruption. So, what's really interesting? So, what happens to Alexander after the First World War?
Yes. So, well, exactly 9 months after he returned in 1918, my great grandmother was born. So, and he continued to direct the family's textile business until it was taken over by the communists after World War II. So, but they kept the big house, the extravagant garden, the items, the diary, of course. But apparently, he was just a regular family man. And a lot of the older generation, the older people who are alive today who remember him, he used to just go out on his bike and go to the swimming baths and go out for a swim every day when he retired. And we have so many pictures of them, him and his family as well, albums, hundreds of photos. And yeah, they just seem like a regular kind of father figure in a way, especially for my grandfather, who was taken on by Alexander because his real father was lived in West Germany, and Weidemtun was in the east. So we never really got to know his dad. So Alexander taught him a lot of things. Everything that he knew, he passed on to my grandfather, and that's why he praised him so much. He continued to preserve the items, and then it got passed down to us. So yeah. So even after the war, my great grandmother, it just said how great of a man he was. People used to praise him. My great grandmother was only 90, well, she died at 98 when I was 21. So I do have fond memories of her, and she would always talk about her parents, her father, and yeah, and because we had all these personal artifacts from the family, like little memory boxes. Even though he's been gone for so long, it's like you know him. It's really strange. But yeah, so I wish I got to know him. Obviously, be 145 by now, but it's but everything that they passed down, that's what we can base our opinions on.
I know it's just that this the magic of history, and it still draws us strong, certainly draws me and other cult members in the WFA and the Western Front Association, which is a obviously it's a you can always check out, but you can never leave. Once you're in the cult, you're sucked into this story, and it just the more you learn, the more you build. And so, what would you like people to take away from reading your book?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think, I mean, there are a few things, but the main thing would be to, I mean, delve deep into your family history, into your past. I mean, there's probably so much of this stuff lying around in people's attics, cupboards, family albums, stories, that are just waiting to be uncovered. So if it can encourage people to, I don't know, maybe look at their great grandparents or relatives' diaries and memoirs, and then maybe publishing them too. It just helps other people understand what these people actually went through, and it's interesting as well. When you meet people on the way, do a lot of traveling. I personally did a lot of traveling France and took these postcards to these soldiers' graves. So, and then you just kind of meet people. You meet historians, people who are interested. You share stories. So, if it can encourage people to do this and maybe other things that have been lost for so long, then that to me is, it's I've accomplished what I wanted to do.
And now for the sales pitch. Where can people get this book from, and how can they go about obtaining it?
Yes, of course. Well, it's self-published. You can actually order it via most good bookshops, Waterstones, even Amazon. There's an ebook, paperback and hardback. It's not in the you can't buy them in the stores as of yet. It was published about 6 months ago, and because it's self-published, it's taking time to hopefully get recognized and be made available on the bookshelves. But you can order it from Waterstones in the USA, Barnes and Noble, just most bookshops really.
And just for our just for the sake of completeness, what is it called, and who's the author?
Yes, it's called The Other Trench, the World War I Diary and Photos of a German Officer, and well, co-authored me, well, Philip Cross and Lieutenant Alexander Pfeiffer. So if you type in Lieutenant Alexander Pfeiffer, Philip Cross, the trench, it will come up.
Philip, thank you very much for your time. That's fantastic.
Excellent. Well, thanks for having me.
You have been listening to the Mentioned in Dispatches podcast from the Western Front Association with me, Tom Thorpe. Thank you for all my guests for appearing on this edition. The theme music for this podcast was George Butterworth's The Banks of Green Willow. It was performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Krish Russman, and produced by Biz Records. This recording is part of a collection of orchestral works by Butterworth performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and supported by the Western Front Association. This is available from all good record stores under the record code BIS 2195. Until next time.